Danielle DiMartino Booth, how are you?
I'm doing well today. How are you?
Doing well. So at the 2024 Rural Investment Symposium, give me your thoughts so far on, I guess we're at the halfway point of the year here, and it looks like we're hitting recession, but I want to get in some real data. Where's really the consumer at? And specifically also you mentioned, or you talk about really even micro, like some of your indicators that you follow.
Yeah,
what's the point of that?
I think more precisely said, I think we're hitting recession recognition. So I think the rest of the world is kind of figuring it out because of the quality and the depth of the revisions to the payroll data is literally rewriting history. I mean, you don't go in thinking, well, gee, it looks like we created 500,000 jobs in the private sector in the third quarter of 2023. And then you go to sleep the next night and you're like, or it was a loss of 192,000 jobs on a net basis. And that is the case. It is the case that we had net negative job creation, job destruction in the third quarter of 2023. But it's not exactly as if the administration's on the White House lawn going, remember when we said it was 1 million jobs that were created? Now we know that it's not 1 million. It's nobody's saying anything. But by the same token, you know, just if you stay in the weeds, let's say 900,000 jobs disappeared in the private sector in the third quarter. Well, then you have to back out of the income accounts. Well, if 900,000 people were not working, then they weren't producing the income that we assumed in that data input. They weren't consuming what we assumed in the GDP. And that's why payroll revisions lead to GDP revisions, and everything rolls backwards. And that's where we are right now. And when you look in the rearview mirror, it really looks like we started recession in October of 2023. We'll be getting another revision for the fourth quarter of 2023 at the end of July, before the Fed meets, mind you, that could show that it's not just the third quarter of 2023, but also the fourth quarter of 2023 that saw net job losses. So now you have 6 months of job losses. Again, it's the recession recognition that's kicking in right now, more than anything else.
So you are like one of the very few people that actually say that. And what I mean is what you just said, where if you look back at the rearview mirror data, we should be in or could be in recession as the information comes out in October 2023.
Look, it was December of 2008 that the National Bureau of Research waited a record 366 days before saying, recession started in December of 2007. And on average, it takes this entity that has called recessions and called recoveries, on average, it takes about 250 days for them to make the call, for them to have enough information in hand with revisions to say, oh, this is when recession started. Oh, this is when the economy came out of recession and recovery started. Your average recession post-war lasts about 10 months. Not very long. I mean, if we really started, if the U.S. economy really fell into recession last October, are we already out of it?
That was my next questions then.
These are deep thoughts.
Right.
And, you know, the reason, this is where Fed policy comes in. This is where Fed policy comes in, because it's been 12 months since the Fed made a move on the interest rate front. And some would argue that higher for longer is now detrimental. Well, why is that? Well, because we've had 346 bankruptcies this year. Standard & Poor's just reported. Higher for longer is biting. It's hurting household finances. Income expectations over the last 3 months have declined at the second fastest pace in the history of University of Michigan sentiment data back to the 60s. So there's a very large, households are getting it. Companies are, I mean, if you're filing for bankruptcy, you're getting something. Something's gone wrong if you're going out of business.
Right.
You know, we've had 500,000 in the last quarter unrevised data. We just 500,000 raw self-employed individuals vanished from the payrolls.
Right.
So there are lots of very tangible things going on that suggest that this recession is deepening, not ending.
Okay, so that has huge implications here then, and even really moving forward, because the Fed is meeting here at the end of this month, correct me if I'm wrong. And I'm not saying look into this crystal ball and make this projection here, but it seems to me, if what you're saying is correct, that this Fed would even be even more dovish, if not be aggressively cutting potentially. And then we have an election.
We do have an election, but we have the most apolitical Fed chair since Paul Volcker was in office. Mm-hmm. Now, according to the Freedom of Information Act, Chair Powell's calendar is everybody's business. So we know that compared to his predecessors, Greenspan, Bernanke, Yellen, we know that he has been up on the Hill more than any other of his prior three predecessors. He is a very politically savvy, shrewd Fed chair who visits with individuals in Congress on both sides of the aisle. He listens to what they have to say. He listens to what is concerning their constituents. That does not mean that he's in President Biden's office every other day and he's taking marching orders. Much different than being political in terms of accepting guidance. In that sense, he's very apolitical. Biden was none too kind, wanted to replace him with somebody else who was much more progressive, advocated for things like digital currency, climate change being addressed by monetary policy, things that Jay Powell would say, kind of, sort of, to paraphrase, over my dead body. So Biden tried to replace him. Trump tried to fire him. When he was asked at a press conference recently, he said, the politics make no difference. When it's time to lower rates, we will lower rates. Politics be damned. And I take him for his word on that.
Yeah. So this has big implications here then. All of this going on, and we're at a natural resource conference here. What are those implications, if you would, for natural resources, specifically for gold, which is a de facto currency, if you would, almost?
Well, gold is a de facto safe harbor, right? And that's what it's always been. In good times, in bad times, in inflationary periods, in deflationary bouts brought about by financial market events, gold is your safe harbor.
Right.
And I've just told you that bankruptcies are running at the fastest pace since 2010. That tells you that there is pain and suffering in the credit market right now, and that we could easily have a credit market event. And if that is the case, then you certainly want to be holding on to your gold.
Yeah.
Because that's a safe place to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Danielle, I know you have to run, so we're just going to end it now, but I just want to thank you so much
for
your
time.
Well,
if you don't mind, though, I do want to hop for 2 seconds on the dollar.
Yeah, okay. Well, I want to get... So
I would just, it's a friendly reminder that the last time there was a global financial crisis, and if you look at the U.S. domestic economic disappointment, it's running very high right now. Disappointments are.
Right.
On a global level, that's also the case. Mm-hmm. And so in times of global markets disruption, global recession, the world tends to pile into the dollar.
Right.
And that's exactly what happened in the aftermath of 2008, 2009, 2010, is that we ended up with a lot more dollar-denominated debt than we had before the crisis.
Right.
So on a practical level, for the de-dollarization crew, I would only give this advice. If we're going to have another global recession, if we're going to have another global financial crisis of some kind, even though Yellen said not in my lifetime, but if we are going to go down that path, don't double down on the dollar this time if you want to truly de-dollarize.
Right.
If you want to stay in the dollar and remain with 87% of all currency transactions being in the greenback, keep doubling down. But on a practical level, until the world stops adopting the dollar, we're never going to get away from it. And I'm an American. I kind of like the greenback. But I'm very unsympathetic to the de-dollarization crowd because it's not often enough that they put their money where their mouth is.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. I have an ongoing conversation with a friend of mine. He's American, lives in Australia, and he does a lot of business globally. And he says, Andy, they all want, meaning they, the world, they all want dollars. They all go to dollars, especially when there's a crisis.
Especially when there's a crisis. It's like the Italian mafia going to the mattresses. When push comes to shove, they go to dollars. Yeah. And until that ends, as sexy as it is to dream of de-dollarization and diversifying away from the greenback, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Daniela DiMartino Booth. I really appreciate your time, and how can people find you?
So please follow me on Twitter if you don't already, at DiMartino Booth, and come to Substack. Subscribe. Love to have you as clients. DiMartinoBooth.substack.com.
I will put all of this in the show notes and on YouTube, as well as Apple and Spotify. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
You bet.